listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Good morning to you. Mike McNamara in for a Friday edition of All Marine Radio right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. I hope you're having a good Friday so far. And coming to you today from Holly Springs, North Carolina, where my son and daughter-in-law live. Got up early yesterday, like 3 o'clock in the morning, drove up to LAX, got on a flight that left there at 5:50, flew to Atlanta, and then here to Jacksonville. Got here at about 4 in the afternoon, grabbed a rental car, went over and found Jeff Kenny at the BOQ at Camp Lejeune. And then he and I went looking for my son after I ironed a shirt in his room. So I decided that I'd fly the day of the event, the 2nd Marine Division Change of Command, that I would not bring a suitcase. I would essentially be dressed for the event, except for the shirt I would wear. I would go to Jeff's room, I'd iron my shirt, grab Jeff, and then we'd go to the Change of Command. So we did that. And so we swung by to see my kid. He was in a after-action review. And so we said, screw him, we're not waiting around for him. So we went to the Change of Command. My son joined us later. And it was a great, for a lot of different reasons, for me personally. And even as a dad, it was an awesome night. First of all, seeing General Furness give up 2nd Marine Division after 2 years is, you know, it's kind of sad because it's the top infantry organization that anybody ever could command. And so after that, you know, life gets different. And one never knows if one will command again. So seeing it through his eyes is, I'm sure, more than a bit of sadness in giving up the storied 2nd Marine Division. But my experience with Dave and the Marines and Sailors of the 2nd Marine Division over the course of the last 18 months, 19 months, has been unbelievable. And longer than that. Yeah, about 20 months. So my experience has been life-changing, and got a chance to meet and see a bunch of those guys last night. And so, you're supposed to get to the, first of all, life has been pretty exciting here relative to weather and the whole COVID thing. So they weren't exactly sure what they would do for the change of command. Wound up having it in front of the division headquarters here. And so, they had two platoons that represented the division. And the picture you see with this post, that you will see with this post when I get it done, is a picture of all the battle colors of the regiments and the battalions in the division. And so it's when you look at the battle streamers on the battle colors, that's it's a story of the division. So it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool when you see, even in the limited sense that it was last night, when you see the pageantry of an organization like this, it's always cool. And then, you had the firing battery, rendering honors and things like that, which things that I like. But it's the people, right? So, but for me, the most special part for me is now coming back here, as I have so many different times, crossing paths with people that I met. And I crossed paths with Mike Regner, Major General type, retired. He and his wife, Mary, have been to post-traumatic winning, probably four times. And so I got a chance to talk to Mike, who's a great guy. And then guys like Dale Alford, who's the base commander here at Camp Lejeune, Marine Corps Installations East. And so Dale's just another great guy. He'll retire in about a year, but just a fun guy and a smart guy, tough guy. And Dale's one of those interesting guys who's been involved in combat or contingency operations at every rank he's ever held in the Marine Corps. His career is unbelievable. And then there's a couple guys though that I met through post-traumatic winning. Regner's one of them, and so he's a special guy. But there's a Sergeant Major Second MAW by the name of Jake Reese. And Jake, and I can never say, remember how you say his name, Reef or Rife. I screwed me up. And he says it doesn't matter, say it either way. But anyway, I met him and never met him in my life. He came to post-traumatic winning, what, 20 months ago. So 8 months. We're into the 8th month, right? So 12, and I don't know why I don't think it's that long. But anyway, 20 months ago. So he writes me a letter after he had been to post-traumatic winning. He talked about, everybody got told they had to go. And so he and the CO of 10th Marines, where he was a sergeant major, they rode over in a van, and they took, a couple NCOs and some other junior Marines with them. Because they thought it'd be interesting on the way back to listen to what, Marines had to say about it. He said, I was blown away by the presentation because it's not something, I haven't never seen anything like that before. I thought, the presentation is spot on in terms of where this needs to go. I thought it was powerful. So he writes this incredible email. And then he gets to the part where he and the CO of 10th Marines get into the van. And he tells a story about talking to Marines. He said, now I'm talking junior Marines, PFCs, Lance Corporals, guys that haven't been in the Marine Corps very long. And the things they said about it are the reason I'm writing this email. And he went on to quote these Marines. And he said, so, look, I don't know you, but I just wanted to tell you, please keep doing this. It's what we need, you know, and he went on. So that started a relationship with Jake that got me. So he left 10th Marines, got promoted. He didn't get promoted in rank, but in terms of billet, he became the Sergeant Major of the 2nd Marine Air Wing. Now, and entirely fitting, I might add, he's a great, great leader. And he genuinely gives a shit. And so he becomes Sergeant Major of 2nd Marine Air Wing. So he goes to the wing commanding general, a general by the name of Heckel, and he says, hey, I'd like to bring this guy in to talk to the Marines. And so he told me, he said, you know, he said, look, Sergeant Major, if that's what you want to do, he said, I never heard the guy, you know, I can call Dave Furness and see what he has to say. And he said, but if you want to do it, he said, I'll support you. And so last January, I went and spoke up at Cherry Point. And he said the impact was after I left, you know, I still get emails from Marines up there. But anyway, and I know the impact it's going to have. So he called me and he told me that, you know, he said, look, he said, we're just blown away by what happened. He said, I knew it would happen again, but it's always really cool to see. And the CG is like, holy shit. Then the IG showed up and, you know, their outbrief points were, not sure what you've done here, but never seen Marines that have been so inclined to talk about mental health. Felt like they had an understanding of it. Felt like they had tools, blah, 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 blah. So he introduced me to General Heckel, who just took over 1MEF. In fact, his change of command at 1MEF was the first day, was the day of the Amtrak accident. They had the change of command in the morning. And then the accident was that afternoon. So anyway, just irony. So he introduced me to General Heckel last night. And but Jake has just been this phenomenal guy who I had no relationship with before, had never met him. And so I got a chance to hang out with him a little bit last night, introduce him to my son, John, who attended the change of command with me. And so just a chance to sit and reconnect with guys like that. The other guy who saw this thing the first week it happened is a lieutenant colonel. He's a battalion commander getting ready to give up his command, 2nd Battalion, 8th Marines. His name is Tom Sievert. Now, Sievert, I see walking up, or I turn around and he's standing there, and I've emailed and text messaged him. He's been deployed, but I thought he should have got my emails. So, and he didn't answer any of them. So I see him, he's standing there with his wife. I turn around and he goes, hey, and I punch him right in the chest, and not in like a, hey kiddo, how you doing way, in a boom kind of way. And he takes a step back and he says, I know I deserve that. I'm like, you son of a bitch. And I said, excuse me. And I introduced myself to his wife. And, but Tom was the first battalion commander that saw it and seized it, right? And took it up with his battalion, 2nd Battalion, 8th Marines. In fact, the Warrior Wellness Octagon exists because of the Sergeant's Council in 2-8. It started out as a triangle that comes out of a wellness triangle that comes out of the book Struggle Well, written by Ken Falk and Josh Goldberg. If you haven't read it, you should. And so the sergeants at 2A said, "Yeah, this is a little bit too lofty for us. Could somebody dumb this down? I mean, does spirituality mean are we religious?" So anyway, I said, "You know, I can dumb that down. I mean, hell, it's what I do really well." And so I did. And so I thought about it. I said, "So if we were going to have an evaluation tool, what would we evaluate?" And so that's where the Warrior Wellness Octagon came from. It started out as a triangle, and then by the time I got done, it was eight things. And if you're going to make it a geometric shape, the octagon is the one. So anyway, but Sievert has been a collaborator from the start on this, you know, and he takes things back and he thinks about them, right? And he's the kind of guys that I've hung out with my whole life, which are pretty unassuming, normal guys, but they're smart guys, even though they would tell you they're not. They would look at you and go, "Yeah, that's not me." Hardworking, yes. Right? Diligent, yes. Smart guy, maybe not. But anyways, but when you hear, you know, Will Costantini, you hear Jeff Kenney, you hear Tim Lynch, you hear the people I tend to have on the show. They are smart guys. They masquerade it well, but and Sievert is every bit out of that mold. So I see him and we start talking. Now again, he just got back off a deployment where he put the concepts of post-traumatic winning, you know, to work. And, you know, so having the ability, you know, last night to sit down and, well, actually stand around and talk with those guys for a while after, you know, doing this for 20 months. And I mean, the interesting part of it for me is they're really curious, you know, well, what have you been doing? Where has this gone? What is it being? You know, and so they're, you know, really interested in it, in post-traumatic winning, because they've seen the power of it in their unit. So last night, for me, was just a wonderful, wonderful evening. And the other interesting part of this is I have a son who's a company commander now. So when you're a company commander, you're like bona fide, okay? You're a bona fide, you know, Marine. And so I have two sons, John and Patrick. John the older, my oldest son, and Patrick number two. Patrick got out of the Marine Corps after he did his time in 3-5 and is now working up in D.C. And John has stayed in and now a company commander. So, but it was as a father, it's interesting because now your son is, you know, beyond just his initial time as lieutenant. He's now become a professional. And you go to an event with your son and he knows people and he's, you know, having professional type conversations. And it was kind of interesting as a dad to, it was kind of interesting as a dad to watch your son as a professional among a bunch of very, very highly regarded professionals. And so that was kind of another part of last night was, you know, going to these events, but, you know, with your son who's now a professional, you know, Marine, infantry officer. So that was also extremely cool. But and then we stayed there much longer. You know, the thing started at 7 o'clock at night, 1900 for you military types, and so I, you know, thought we'd go to the reception for a little while and then head back to my son's house because if you're a foodie and you listen to All Marine Radio, you're familiar with my daughter-in-law, Susie. Well, Susie was making food, and you normally don't want to miss that. So anyhow, but we stayed. I don't think I got out of there until about 11:30. After talking for much of the evening, so it's just a wonderful, it's just a wonderful experience, and it was a long way to go for a trip that's going to last less than 24 hours here on site, but well worth it. So we're standing around talking last night, and Jeff Kenny's there, and Jeff Kenny's telling me about, he goes, "Hey, Mac." He goes, "You know what surprises me?" I said, "What?" "It was a lot of smart people listen." I said, "Why does that surprise you?" And he goes, "I don't know, it just does." And so we're talking, and he's telling me about this guy named Sinclair. He goes, "Yeah, he's a smart guy and he listens." And so we're having a conversation about that. And so then I meet the smart guy. His name's Wayne Sinclair. And so it was, I meet him at the reception. So we're standing around talking, and I look and I'm like, "Oh, you're the smart guy." And he starts laughing. And he says, "Hey, Mac," he said, "I'm Wayne Sinclair." I said, "Oh my God, man, I had to hear all about how smart you were this afternoon." And he starts laughing. He said, "Well, don't believe everything you hear." I said, "Oh no, when Jeff Kenny says you're smart, you normally tend to be smart, so don't try to sandbag my ass." And but just again, I mean, just the night when you meet great guys. And the coolest part about this fraternity is you can't bullshit your way into it. You have to perform your way into it to reach the level of being a trusted and respected peer. It's this meritocracy kind of thing in all organizations, that your work is credible, your efforts are pure, and your work ethic is substantial, and that's the only way you can prove yourself into groups like this, and it's really cool. So I got a chance to meet people I'd never met. Like as I said, I'd never met General Heckel, the new 1MEF commander, but I'd actually worked for him, doing post-traumatic winning at Second MAW in January. Got a chance to reconnect with Tom Siebert, Jake Reifrief, and then a whole bunch of other people, battalion commanders who I've met, regimental commanders who I've met, and then got a chance to see Dave's family, his lovely wife Linda, and their kids, and as they head back up north to the DC area, as Dave heads to the Pentagon. But just a wonderful time here at Camp Lejeune. I don't know if I'll be back. I hope I will, but we'll see. And so on a Friday morning, good morning, Whitney Houston, as she does, makes it official. Good morning to you.
Ooh.
Dan, this is dedicated today in kind of the aftermath of the 2nd Marine Division change of command to two guys who have been incredible supporters of post-traumatic winning. But to me, more importantly, they've been incredible practitioners of it. They've seen what I've seen, which is the power that we have, the power that comes out of our culture to change lives. And they saw it in an instant, and they practice it, and they open doors to it. And so Sergeant Major Jake Reif and Lieutenant Colonel Tom Sieverts, the outgoing commanding officer of 2nd Battalion, 8th Marines, Sergeant Major right now of 2nd MAW. And so those two guys have been special guys to me. One, their constant encouragement, but they change people's lives all the time. And much like me, much like General Furness, it is one of the joyful pieces of their life. And so this is dedicated to those two guys as not only believers and supporters of post-traumatic winning, but preachers of the gospel of post-traumatic winning and guys who changed lives. So on a Friday, this is dedicated to them.
Betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran, or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake but learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fighting. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
Hmm. Now, I'm not going to do any weather today. I'm not sure why, I'm just not doing it. Anyway, I know that's kind of unprofessional, but I never claimed to be a professional. And so this is going to do it for today, because I've got to get on a flight and fly back to California. But I do want to say this. I had a number of conversations with people yesterday, and on Thursday, we talked about an issue that's not a small issue. And during the Lynch, Kenny, Costantini event, we talked about a story that during a Senate confirmation hearing, an issue was talked about that discussed the Navy not having a credible path to 355 ships. Now, I had a number of people come up to me who heard that and said, you know, you guys are pretty spot on. And made me think. And so it was interesting, the discussions I had about that. And I will, I'll kind of consolidate those discussions into this. If those large ticket items aren't serviced, if they don't have a path, what are the implications for the Marine Corps? And that's a big deal. Okay, that's a big deal. And so if, you know, we've got to restore our ballistic submarine fleet, that's a lot of money. Okay, and that's part of our nuclear triad. You know, the Ford class carrier, that's a big deal. Okay, so and they're all gigantor ticket items relative to money. Where does the Marine Corps come in all of that? Where does the funding of the Marine Corps in this, you know, in this new thing, you know, that General Berger's rolling out? And does the Marine Corps have any guarantees from the House Armed Service Committee chairman, from the Senate Armed Service Committee chairman, that, yeah, we got it, we think what you're doing is good, and we're going to finance it? Because if the Marine Corps doesn't have those kind of guarantees, and I've seen neither one of those guys make any statements that, yeah, you know, we've sat down with the Marine Corps, we believe where they're going is right, you know, we're prepared to fund it, you know, we're not sure on the timeline of the funding, but ultimately we're going to get it. If that isn't there, then what you have is the Marine Corps divesting itself of both equipment and personnel, and the ships they want aren't approved, they're not designed, they're not funded. So where does that leave the Marine Corps? So I had a number of people come up to me and talk about that. So on a Friday, I'll leave you with that somber thought. But now, more than anything else, as I get out of here on a Friday and get ready to go catch a plane, it's just a great day, a great evening here. On the eastern edge of North Carolina, right after a hurricane went up the coast. The Marines and Sailors, 2nd Marine Division, were awesome last night. And for the last 20 months, I've had the opportunity to come back here and hopefully have an impact on lives. And so last night was just an awesome event. And, can't say thank you enough to General Furness for inviting me And then the opportunity to go and to go with my son is something that I'll never forget. It was just a wonderful night. So on that note, have a great weekend. Back in Studio One on Monday morning. So on a Friday, All Marine Radio, over and out. And don't be afraid to go change somebody's life.